Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I'm Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, sport, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing.
And we're back. Welcome to episode number 31 of Are You Quizzing Me? Aditya and I are back for another round of non-competitive yet confusing quizzing. So at the beginning of the episode, let's start off with my question for the audience. In 1956, when Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru inaugurated India's first nuclear reactor, he saw the blue Cherenkov radiation and likened it to the beauty of a group of female spirits of the clouds and waters. These beings are referred to as Feishan in Chinese and feature prominently in South Asian and Southeast Asian Hindu and Buddhist culture. Which mythological group of characters am I talking about? Let me repeat the question. In 1956, when Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru inaugurated India's first nuclear reactor built at BIRC, he saw the blue Cherenkov radiation and likened it to the beauty of a group of female spirits of the clouds and waters. These beings are referred to as Feishan in Chinese and feature prominently in South Asian and Southeast Asian Hindu and Buddhist culture. Which mythological group of characters am I talking about? We will reveal the answer at the end of the episode. So stay tuned to all the end, to the very end of this episode to hear the answer. And now for the low point of every episode, where we listen to Aditya try to get us cancelled.
You almost sound like you don't secretly enjoy it. I think there is a masochist part of you, Vineet, that really enjoys being put through this, because let me remind you the fact that I was very happy doing this once and once only in our first episode and never doing it again. And you have insisted every time that I continue it. So you do not get to complain. Our listeners might, but you don't. Okay. the last episode, the question I asked was 50 Cent, who chose his name as a metaphor for change, what name would he have chosen if he was Indian? And this would be a name that would not be considered classically Indian, but it makes a lot of sense. And do you know what the name is, Vineet? It is Annette. Have you heard of the name Annette?
Yes, but...
But did you realize it also is 50 paisa, because it is Anna 8, 8 Annas, which is 50 paisa. So Annette would be...
Oh my 50 God. 50
cents Indian name.
Oh God. How are you still alive? How is it that nobody shot you in the middle of the street for this?
Yeah. I also wonder sometimes. I do.
And with that bombshell, to quote Jeremy Clarkson, let's move on to our round of quizzing today. Aditya, will you start us off?
I shall do that. Honors. I shall do the honors. Okay. So I have done a version or a slightly similar set of questions earlier, and I'm going to do another one. The last time I did was I asked you what the movie was based off of its tagline. These were famous Hollywood films, and I gave you the taglines, and you were supposed
yes,
to
tell me. Yes, I remember that well.
Today, we are going to do the foreign titles of English movies.
Okay.
So very often, they directly translate it. And it would be, say, in Japanese, the name would be exactly what it is in English, except just translated. But sometimes things are lost in translation, or they choose to go a different way. And that leads to some very fun titles. So let's start with some easy stuff first, okay? Reign of Falafel.
Reign of Falafel?
Yeah.
Is this You Don't Mess with the Zohan?
Oh, no.
No.
Literally think of somebody trying to translate a movie, but changing it slightly. So in Israel, this English movie or this American movie was called Reign of Falafel.
Oh, wait. This is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is called Reign of Falafel in Israel. Okay,
falafel, meatball. Okay, nice. Yeah. Okay.
In Argentina, the movie was called Vaseline.
In Argentina, it was called Vaseline.
Yeah.
is this, and I may get canceled for this, but is this Brokeback Mountain?
Oh no. Oh no, 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 no. It was not. It's not like it's making some subtle point or making some inside joke. It is trying to translate it, but just doing it in a quirky way, all of these movie names. So Vaseline.
Vaseline is petroleum jelly. It's some kind of jelly or...
Very close, very close. Think John Travolta.
It's Grease. It's Grease. Oh my God. Grease becomes Vaseline. Ah. Yes. Argentina, Vaseline. What do you do? Why you do this?
In Poland, this movie was called Electronic Murderer.
Terminator, I'm guessing.
Terminator, yes.
Electronic.
In Italy, this movie was called If You Leave Me, I Delete You.
Fatal Attraction. No.
No, this is... I love that you go into Fatal Attraction. But no, this is very much talking about the plot of the film.
Oh my God, Eternal Sunshine of the...
Spotless Mind. Yes,
Spotless Mind, right. Yeah. It's such a beautiful movie and they named it If You Leave Me, I'll Delete You.
Okay, let's do one more. He's a Ghost.
Ghost?
No. This is a spoiler, so I don't know why China did this, but it's a spoiler.
Oh, God, it's a Sixth Sense. It's a Sixth Sense.
It is the Sixth Sense, yes.
Oh, God.
Another beautiful one from Israel. Love is in the Sky.
Up?
No, this. I don't even know why it went with this title, but yeah, Love is in the Sky.
Love is in the Sky. I have no clue with that one.
Tom Cruise.
Top Gun?
Yes.
Oh my God. Love is in the Sky. They basically took the movie and took like what, 5-10% of the plot?
Yeah. I have one last one, which is okay. So easy, but it's hilarious. So this is again back to Italy. And this one is called Dawn of the Dead, Idiots.
Wait, this is the Cornetto trilogy one. This is, what is it called? This is Simon Pegg's movie. I know, Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead. In Italian became Dawn of the Dead, Idiots.
Which frankly is actually a better title, Dawn of the Dead, Idiots.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Wow, I'm thoroughly blown away by those. Unfortunately, my next question is going to be much of a downer because I have nothing remotely as entertaining as that. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question about printing.
Okay.
In printing terminology, what is also known as a shriek, a bang, a screamer, a slammer, or a gasper?
So when you say printing technology, you're talking about like printing press.
Yeah. What is also known as a shriek, a bang, screamer, slammer, or a gasper? Or if you're American, gasper.
Is it an exclamation mark?
You got that very quickly. Yes, it is an exclamation mark.
Why do they use that these different terms for that?
I'm not exactly sure the origin of these terms, but I'm guessing it has something to do with the fact that, you put them after a shriek, a bang, a scream, slam, or a gasp. So I'm guessing it's evocative of the emotion or the situation in which it's used. Or it just might be some inside terminology. But yeah, these are all other new printing terms for the exclamation point, exclamation mark. Yeah, so that's a great crack.
Lovely.
It's no electronic murderer, but still.
It's tough to beat electronic murderer.
Electronic.
Now, I'm going to ask you something to do with the epidemics and pandemics that we have, unfortunately, as a species, become very familiar with. But let's not talk about COVID. Let's go back to 2009. I'm sure you remember what was happening in 2009, Vineet.
That was the H1N1 swine flu pandemic.
Swine flu pandemic. In the same year, something in pop culture commemorated this H1N1 pandemic. What do I speak of? That is very vague because I'm sure there were other things as well which commemorated the H1N1 pandemic. So let's be a bit more specific. What in the space of gaming commemorated?
Oh, my first guess when you say gaming and when we say pandemic would be to go to Resident Evil.
Good guess, but no.
I'm not a big gamer. I will have to work.
You have definitely heard of this game. I would be surprised if you have not also played it.
Oh, okay. Is it like a mobile game or a proper console video PC game?
Both, but it was initially on mobile.
So then I would say it will be Angry Birds then, because you have pigs as the antagonists of that particular game series.
Perfectly cracked. That is exactly what the answer is. So the game was first released on 11th December 2009 on iOS. And at the time, the 2009 swine flu epidemic was in the news. So the staff decided to use pigs as the enemies for the Angry Birds. And that's why those iconic pigs were used, because everybody was kind of mad at the pigs, which is not fair. It's not really the pigs' fault.
It's not fair. But... it's not fair. You shouldn't be mad at something so delicious.
That's not what I was implying, but sure.
Anybody who has had bacon can never be mad at a pig. At least not for long.
Vineet, your question.
So, in the 1990s, Oleg Kuzovkov, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, it's a Russian name, was on holiday when he saw a little girl on the beach. The child was so genuine and open that she could easily walk up to a stranger and play chess with him or pick up his flippers and go swimming. However, after a few days, the vacationers began to hide from the girl. She was too active and intrusive. This was the inspiration behind which TV series, the most watched in its category in the world in 2021, and which has over 100 billion views across all videos on YouTube.
Oh, you said YouTube. That changes things. Because you were saying chess and what sounded like Russian names, and I was thinking Queen's Gambit, but perhaps not the answer then.
No, surprisingly, you'll also find this show on Netflix. It's not just on YouTube. You can find it on Netflix. You can find it on, I think it's also available on Woot Kids. To be honest, again, I'm not sure if you may have heard of it, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners have, definitely.
You have an unfair advantage, Vineet. You have a child.
Yes, I know. And oh. I plan to use any kind of advantage I have.
No, I will need a hint or a clue.
Okay, it's about, the character is of a very young girl and the other character is a retired circus bear.
No, that does not strike a bell at all.
No, I know. I had a feeling when I was asking this question, this may be outside your wheelhouse. But it is one of the biggest shows in the world. So if nothing else, you will get a TIL from this today.
I always love those. If there is another clue, I'd love that. If not, tell me what the answer is.
Okay, there is, I don't think I can give you a clue because I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you heard of the show called Masha and the Bear?
Very vaguely. I don't even think I can picture what it looks like, but I have heard of the name, yes.
So Masha and the Bear is the number one preschool show worldwide. It is 36 times more in demand than the average show. And it puts it in the top 0.2% of all TV series across all platforms.
That is insane. That is just bonkers.
My son has already watched like 5 seasons of this back to back and is on 3rd or 4th iteration of this. I mean, like, he just keeps watching the same.
I like how the fact that children are such a captive audience and have very high rewatchability.
Yes, I mean, he can watch the same episode like 15 times and be perfectly fine with it. And he'll keep laughing at it the same time again. I don't know what that says about his attention span, but he enjoys the heck out of it. Your turn.
So for my question, there is a religious order of Franciscan Friar, which I think is how it's pronounced, F-R-I-A-R-S, within the Catholic Church. This order arose in 1525. They have a very specific garment that they wear, which everybody is familiar with, except not as a garment, but instead something that we consume. What do I speak of, Vineet?
They have a garment which we are familiar with as the name of something which we consume.
And by consume, I don't mean like entertainment that we consume with our eyes. I mean
yes,
consume.
Yes, no, I get it. So obviously you're talking about the monk's hood and robe or whatever. I mean, like for nuns, they call it a habit. I'm not sure what they call it for monks.
Well, technically it would be a habit even for monks, but there is something okay. Very specific about them.
Franciscan monks, right, you said. Yes. Franciscan friars, yeah. Okay.
I did not specify this, by the way, so let me clarify that again. The name of the consumable product actually comes from the name of the order. So what they wear is what is directly related to the consumable product, but the name of the product comes from the name of the order.
And the name of the order is the Order of St. Francis of Assisi, I'm guessing, when you say Franciscan.
I did not give you the full name. I said it is a religious order of Franciscan Friar.
Okay. Then I'm just asking you directly, is the order we are talking about the Order of St. Francis of Assisi?
No, it's not. Let me tell you what the name is and I'll leave the relevant part as blank. So it is Order of Friar Minor Dash.
Order of Friar Minor something. You will have to give me some kind of clue. I'm not familiar with this particular order.
I said a consumable product. Let's be more specific. It is a drink. It is a type of drink. It's a type of beverage. It is something a lot of people have in the morning.
Is it coffee?
Coffee, but we have to be a bit more specific. What type of coffee?
You will have to put me out of my misery or give me a clue which will make it obvious for somebody even as stupid as me.
The name of the order was Order of the Friar Minor Capuchin, which gives
its name. I've heard of the Capuchin monks, but I thought that was related to, you know, Capuchin monkeys. There was a monkey. Aren't there some kind of monkeys, Capuchin monkeys or something like that?
Well, that would be new trivia. We can always fact check that. But in the context of this particular piece of trivia, they wear habits which have a very specific color. And that color resembles a cappuccino very, very, very closely. And that's how the cappuccino gets its name. The Capuchin monks and the color of their habits.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It actually comes from the Latin caputium. It is the diminutive form of cappuccio in Italian, which means hood or something that covers the head. Yeah, the cappuccino literally means small capuchin. And these habits that they wear have hoods ever attached to them. And they have that very specific color, which resembles a cappuccino.
Oh, I did not know this. Yeah, no, because I always assume that the Capuchin monkeys, if I'm not mistaken, again, we'll have to fact check this, but the monkey on Friends is a Capuchin monkey.
You might be right. Yes, I think I remember.
Yeah, so I read that and then I read something about the order of the Capuchin monks. I did not know, by the way, that they were called Friar Minor Capuchin. I just thought of them also, you know, as the Capuchin monks. But so they are also Franciscan monks who are an order called Minor Capuchin. And fascinating question.
And this would be a beautiful visual question. So I would encourage any listener who has access to a device right now where they can view this, please go Google what those friars look like and you'll see the close resemblance to the color of a cappuccino. Also, apologies for mispronouncing friar. I still don't know the entire question.
I think it's friar. I'll tell you why I think it's friar, because I used to watch a lot of Robin Hood cartoons and videos, and they always said Friar Tuck.
I have always read Robin Hood, So the pronunciation was always up to me. And I'm still not sure how we pronounce it.
Okay. No, that was a great question. That was a great question. This, I am fairly sure, is a question that you will knock out of the park very easily, very quickly. When Led Zeppelin landed at the Singapore airport for their concert, government officials did not let them get off the plane and the tour had to be cancelled. What was the reason?
Long hair?
Yes, it is. It was because of long hair. As I said, veteran of Singapore for many years, I knew you would crack this, but it's a lovely piece of trivia and I just wanted to use this chance to get it across. Yes, so the Singapore government had introduced a law in the 1960s to prohibit males from growing long hair because they felt that it encouraged the hippie culture, which was not good for the development of the nation. So when Led Zeppelin, famously long-haired, that particular band, when they landed in Singapore, the government refused to let them on because of their long hair. Aditya, curiously enough, is that law still in place?
I would hope not. Otherwise, I have been doing a lot of illegal things in Singapore. I had long hair at one point, so that would have made me on the wrong side of the law. No, I believe I was part of a theater group in Singapore, and me and another friend of mine, who I'm meeting very soon, the Greek geek friend that I've mentioned in the past as well.
Ah, okay.
Both of us at the same time had long hair, and the Singaporean person in the theater group, he told us about this particular law and how I think his father once was questioned a little bit at the airport when he was coming back from somewhere because he had slightly longish hair. I was like, how do you even define long hair? Like, at what point does it become long hair?
I think given Singapore, they'll probably have a certain number of centimeters or something in the law. So
that we would have been on the wrong side of the law if we were there a few decades earlier. So yeah, that is how I know this particular law.
Do they have this? Was it only for long hair, or do they have it for beards as well? Because a lot of hippies had a lot of long beards as well, right?
Yeah, interesting. I would imagine that beards, though, to be fair, maybe beards after a certain length, yes. But I'm also thinking they have also had a very significant Muslim population for a while, and Muslims usually do grow out.
They do, yes. Observe those certain customs, yeah, they do grow out long beard.
And I'm not sure if the Singaporean Muslims do that as well, but yeah, I would imagine that there were some laws at some point. I wouldn't be surprised.
So you cracked that as expected very quickly. So again, the baton, I'm passing the baton to you. Please ask your question.
So Alfred was the sovereign duke of Saxe, Coburg and Gotha from 1893 to 1900. He was the second son and fourth child of Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. Now, on 23rd January 1874, he married the Grand Duchess of Russia, the second and only surviving daughter of Emperor Alexander II of Russia. To commemorate the occasion, something special was created. What was created, Vineet?
Is this some kind of food item?
I feel like you're going to crack this very quickly.
No, because I'll tell you why. Because the British traditionally have this thing where they create something. If I'm not mistaken, they created coronation chicken for Queen Elizabeth's coronation. So they have this thing where they make like special cakes and things like that. You'll have to give me some kind of clue. Nothing's coming to mind immediately.
Okay, there are two clues to be had. The second clue will be a very strong giveaway. So let's start with the first one.
Okay.
To commemorate the occasion, this particular food item was created in a small English bakery. The name of the bakery was Peak Freen's.
Nope, nothing's clicking.
All right. Hopefully the second clue gets you there very quickly. I did not mention the name of his wife, and that was Grand Duchess Maria Alexandrovna of Russia.
You told me this is a giveaway. Is this the Murray biscuit? No, right?
It is the Murray biscuit.
It's the Murray biscuit?
it is the Murray biscuit, yes.
Oh, okay.
So the Murray biscuit was created by the London bakery Peak Freen's in 1874 to commemorate the marriage of the Grand Duchess Maria Alexandrovna of Russia to the Duke of Edinburgh, Alfred.
Of the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
And that's how we get our popular Murray biscuit. And they printed the name of the Grand Duchess on the biscuit as a mark of respect. And that's why you have, and has the iconic name on it, yes.
I am going to link directly from that to another member of the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
Okay.
Simeon Saxe-Coburg-Gotha was born in Sofia in 1937 and became the ruler of his country at the age of 6 in 1943. He was the last reigning monarch of this country, as he was soon overthrown by a communist revolution in 1946, after which he lived in exile with his family until the 1990s, when he returned to his country. In an extremely interesting turn of events, in 2001, he contested and won parliamentary elections to become the democratically elected prime minister of his country for a full term between 2001 and 2005, thus becoming the first and only monarch of a country to get democratically elected to the top political government job. He also belongs to a very exclusive club, that of people living today who were heads of state at the time of the Second World War. There are only two people in that club today. One is obviously Simeon Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. Who's the other? And also tell me which country we are talking about. Which country is Simeon Saxe-Coburg-Gotha? In which country was he the prime minister and erstwhile monarch?
Okay, so this is a two-parter. First question I have to answer is, Simeon Saxe-Coburg-Gotha the only person who has ever been a monarch and has also been elected to the highest office of the country?
Democratically elected.
And is the only person to have ever achieved that. And you're asking me which country is that for? And the other question is, who is the other leader who was alive at the time of World War II?
The Second World War. Who was a head of state Second World War and is still alive today?
Head of state and still alive. Boy, that must be a very old person. A head of state could still be a monarch or a commemorative position, right?
Yes. Break it up. Try the country first and then you can try for the other person.
This is a very broad guess, but I would assume that the country is a European country?
Yes, the country is a European country.
Is it by any chance Denmark?
No, not the Denmark still has a royal family, right?
Oh, so they abolished their monarchy.
Yes, so I'll just repeat those points again so that you clear. He was born in Sofia in 1937, became the ruler of his country at the age of 6 in 1943. He was the last reigning monarch of the country as it was overthrown by a communist revolution in 1946.
Okay.
He lived in exile, came back in 1990s. And in the 1990s, he returned to the country. And in 2001, he contested and won elections to become the prime minister between 2001 and 2005. So which country are we talking about? So it was having a communist government for some period of time.
I'm not sure about this country's history. But because you said Sofia, I'm going to guess Bulgaria.
It is Bulgaria.
Okay, all right.
That was like a reverse red herring I kept in there. So that's Bulgaria. That's easily out of the way. But the more interesting part is, he is, as I mentioned, a member of a very exclusive club, that of heads of state during World War II who are still alive today. So who's the only other person who was a head of state during World War II who is still alive today?
By any chance, was the Emperor of Japan?
No. Hirohito was dead.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, none of the major powers would fit the bill. Or am I incorrect? Is it some?
No, you're right. None of the major powers would fit the bill, yes. But this is not an unknown quantity. This person is not an unknown quantity. I guarantee you, a lot of people have heard of this person. You absolutely know this person.
Is it a democratically elected leader? Is it a monarch?
No, not a democratically elected leader. Technically, you couldn't even call it an election of any kind of sort.
So it's a monarch?
Yeah, it is a kind of a monarchical position, at least, but it's a very weird way of selecting. At least the head of state is the way the head of state is selected is quite strange and unpredictable. Predictable, but still very unpredictable.
The first example that would fit that would be Vatican, but I know that the Pope is not alive, so.
The Pope is definitely not alive. Plus, he's also elected.
True.
Popes are elected. But, yeah. It's a conclave.
Yeah.
And,
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Just by a very interesting group of people and not citizens of Vatican.
You are actually quite close when you said the Vatican, but in the wrong direction. You are in the right, how do I put this, group of people when you say the Vatican, but wrong continent.
Oh, Iran? Okay, I was thinking the Ayatollah.
Because the kings, the Shahs were still in power during World War II.
Right, yeah, the Ayatollah came only after the Iranian Revolution.
Yes, so the Pahlavi dynasty was still ruling Iran at the time.
Nope, I have no clue.
Okay. This person has a long connection with India.
No, it doesn't really help me.
Okay, one more clue. This person is also a recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Wait, this person was a head of state during World War II.
During World War II. Still alive today, has a Nobel Peace Prize, and a very strong connection to India.
Good God, that must be somebody I definitely would have heard of, because that sounds like very interesting.
Oh, yeah, I'm guaranteeing you know this person.
No, but I'm very stuck right now, so please give me a hint or give me a clue or give me the answer then.
I'm just going to tell you one word, and you will immediately tell me who the person is. I want to tell you one word, the name of one place in India, and you will tell me.
Lots of pressure, but let's try.
Dharamshala.
Oh, okay. Nice. Dalai Lama.
Yes, it is the Dalai Lama. Okay. Dalai Lama was technically the head of state of Tibet. Even though he was very young at the time, he was the head of state of Tibet during World War II. When the Chinese invaded Tibet, he had to flee. And he has been a refugee ever since then. But he is still alive today and was a head of state during World War II, making him and Simeon Sachs-Coburg-Gotha the only two living heads of state today, heads of state during World War II who are alive today.
That is absolutely insane. And I know that he's old, but I didn't realize he's that old. And that he became the Dalai Lama at such a young age. Wow, okay.
So that, I think, is the end of today's episode because we are all out of time for any more questions. So Aditya, what is your question for this week?
Okay, so the question that I'm going to ask for next week's episode is going to be based off of the fact that the Marie biscuit was used to commemorate the royal wedding. And if there was anything akin to a royal wedding, and I don't know which specific wedding I'm talking about today, but I will have something specific in mind by the next week's episode. How would that be commemorated? So this is a question in progress that is going to be resolved by next week. Yes.
Okay, fair enough. So I can be wait with bated breath for next week to hear the answer to that very vague question from Aditya. It's vaguer than usual. But yes, so let's go to the audience question that I had asked at the beginning of today's episode. In 1956, when Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru inaugurated India's first nuclear reactor, he saw the blue Cherenkov radiation and likened it to the beauty of a group of female spirits of the clouds and waters. These beings are referred to as Feishan in Chinese and feature prominently in South Asian and Southeast Asian Hindu and Buddhist culture. Which mythological group of characters am I talking about? Forgive me if I have pronounced that wrong, which I'm fairly sure. It's either Feitian or Feishan, but you get the idea. So, Aditya, as like you, dear audience, Aditya is also hearing this question for the first time during this episode. So, Aditya, do you have any answers or any ideas about what the answer could be?
No, I am actually quite blank because I was thinking mermaid, but then you said it's South Asian and Southeast Asian literature, which is not exactly mermaid territory.
So, no, I don't know.
So this is, if you do know the, if your dear audience, if you know what the reactor at the first ever nuclear reactor at BARC was called, the answer becomes obvious in itself. The reactor was called because of Nehru likening the reactor and the beauty of those of the blue Cherenkov radiation to Apsaras.
Oh, okay.
So it's the Apsara reactor. And Apsaras are not unique to Hindu mythology. It's also seen in Buddhist mythology. There are forms of Apsaras even in Chinese mythology as well. They are clear spirits of air and clouds and water and whatnot. On seeing that blue, terrifyingly blue, you know, Cherenkov radiation, Jawaharlal Nehru compared its beauty to that of Apsaras, and that's how the reactor at BARC got its name, the Apsara reactor. And that nice. Is all we have for today's episode. Thank you for listening in. We hope you enjoyed the show and hope you learned something new. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing to our podcast and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. It'll take only a couple of seconds. Please do so. It helps us reach a wider audience and allows more people to discover and enjoy the show. We'd also love to hear from you. Feedback, suggestions, trivia, sponsorships, you name it. You can reach us on Instagram at @RUQuizzingMe. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Aditya will be back after the musical sting with the fact check for this episode, our official cover your ass document, which prevents us from getting into trouble. So that's all the time we have for today, and it's a bye from me.
See you guys next week. And here's the fact check for the episode. The Capuchin monkeys were named after the Order of Friars Minor Capuchin because of the monkeys' physical resemblance to the monks' robes. The long hair ban for males in Singapore defined long hair as hair falling across the forehead and touching the eyebrows, or hair covering the ears, or hair reaching below an ordinary shirt collar. This ban was lifted in the 90s. And that's all for the fact check.